Morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Today, December 10th, 2020, is the 72nd anniversary of the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The declaration was conceived to fulfill a promise of the preamble to the UN Charter in 1945 at the end of World War II, 75 years ago, to, quote, save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, which twice in our lifetime has brought untold sorrow to mankind, and exemplified by the 79th anniversary of Pearl Harbor this past Monday, December 7th, and to reaffirm basic fundamental human rights and worth of the human person in the equal rights of men and women of nations large and small, quote unquote. With my little interruption there in the center. I begin this program by quoting a few passages from a very good book written by Mary Ann Glendon at the beginning of this born-again millennium in 2001, A World Made New, Eleanor Roosevelt and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Early in 1947, with the horrors of the two world wars fresh in their memories, a remarkable group of men and women gathered at the behest of the newly formed United Nations under the chairmanship of Eleanor Roosevelt to draft the first International Bill of Rights. The Human Rights Project was peripheral to the main purpose of the UN to establish and maintain collective security, launched as a concession to small countries and in response to the demand of numerous religious and humanitarian associations that the victorious allies live up to their war rhetoric, that the community of nations would never again countenance such massive violations of human dignity. In the years that followed, to the astonishment of many, human rights would become a political factor that not even the most hard-shelled realist could ignore. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights would become an instrument as well as the most prominent symbol of changes that would amplify the voices of the weak in the corridors of power. The Declaration challenged the long-standing view that a state's treatment of its own citizens was that nation's business and no one else's. It gave expression to diffuse, seated longings and lent wings to movements to bring down colonial empires and provided a rallying point for the freedom movements that spurred the collapse of totalitarian regimes in Eastern Europe and the demise of apartheid. It is the parent document, the primary inspiration for most rights instruments in the world today. The Declaration's 30 concise articles inspired or influenced scores of post-war and post-colonial constitutions and treaties, including the new constitutions of Germany, Japan, and Italy, the defeated Axis nations, and became the pole star of an army of international human rights activists who pressure governments to live up to their pledges and train the searchlights of publicity on abuses that would have remained hidden in former times. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights charted a bold new course for human rights by presenting a vision of freedom as linked to social security, balanced by responsibilities, grounded in respect for equal human dignity, and guarded by the rule of law. By affirming that all its rights belong to everyone, everywhere, the Declaration aimed to put an end to the idea that a nation's treatment of its own citizens or subjects was immune to outside scrutiny. In the April 1948 Foreign Affairs magazine, Eleanor Roosevelt wrote her own hopes for the Declaration. Quote, in the first place, we have put into words some inherent rights. Beyond that, we have found that the conditions of our contemporary world require the enumeration of certain protections which the individual must have to acquire a sense of security and dignity in his and her own person. The effects of this is frankly educational. Indeed, I like to think that the Declaration will help very largely the education of the people of the world. And that was Eleanor Roosevelt. one of the most basic assumptions of the founders of the United Nations and the framers of the Declaration of Human Rights, was that the root causes of atrocities and conflict are frequently due to be found in poverty and discrimination. Those ideas found expression in the Declaration's insistence on the link between freedom and social security and on the relation of both to peace. Like the American Declaration of Independence, the Universal Declaration was radically ahead of its time. After 72 years, its transformative potential has still barely begun to be realized. Forgetfulness, neglect, and opportunism have obscured the Declaration's message that rights have conditions, that everyone's rights are importantly dependent on respect for the rights of others, on the rule of law, and on a healthy civil society. Where, after all, do human rights begin? Eleanor Roosevelt asked in one of her last speeches at the United Nations. In small places, close to home, so close and so small that they cannot be seen on any map of the world. Yet they are the world of the individual person, the neighborhood he lives in, the school or college he attends, the factory, farm, or office where he works. Add she to all of that. Those convictions of the original framers undergird one of the most remarkable features of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, its attention to the small places where people first learn about their rights and how to exercise them responsibly, families, schools, workplaces, and religious and other associations. These little seedbeds of character and competence, together with the rule of law, political freedoms, social security, and international cooperation are all part of the Declaration's dynamic ecology of freedom. The hopes and fears of the men and women who framed the Declaration of Human Rights were grounded in their understanding of human nature. The events of their times had shown them human beings at their best and worst, with their potential for good and evil, reason and impulse, trust and betrayal, creativity and destruction, selfishness and cooperation. The journey of human rights has been marked by impressive advances and heartbreaking setbacks. People not yet born will pass judgment on whether we enhanced or squandered the inheritance handed down to us by the large-souled men and women who strove to bring a standard of right from the ashes of terrible wrongs. And that was Mary Ann Glendon, somewhat abridged. Now, those human rights she so eloquently wrote about. I will skip the preamble and whereas chorus. Also, whenever any of the articles says he or him, add she and her. Article 1. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. Article 2. Everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. Furthermore, no distinction shall be made on the basis of the political, jurisdictional, or international status of the country or territory to which a person belongs, whether it be independent, trust, non-self-governing, or under any other limitations of sovereignty. Article 3. Everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of person. Article 4. No one shall be held in slavery or servitude. Slavery and the slave trade shall be prohibited in all their forms. Article 5. No one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. Article 6. Everyone has the right to recognition everywhere as a person before the law. Article 7. All are equal before the law and are entitled without any discrimination to equal protection of the law. All are entitled to equal protection against any discrimination in violation of this declaration and against any incitement to such discrimination. Article 8. Everyone has the right to an effective remedy by the competent national tribunals for acts violating the fundamental rights granted him by the Constitution or by law. Article 9. No one shall be subjected to arbitrary arrest, detention, or exile. Article 10. Everyone is entitled in full equality to a fair and public hearing by an independent and impartial tribunal in the determination of his rights and obligations and of any criminal charge against him. Article 11. 1. Everyone charged with a penal offense has the right to be presumed innocent until proved guilty according to law in a public trial at which he has all the guarantees necessary for his defense. 2. No one shall be held guilty of any penal offense on account of any act or omission which did not constitute a penal offense under national or international law at the time when it was committed, nor shall a heavier penalty be imposed than the one that was applicable at the time the penal offense was committed. Article 12. No one shall be subjected to arbitrary interference with his privacy, family, home, or correspondence, nor to attacks upon his honor and reputation. Everyone has the right to the protection of the law against such interference or attacks. Article 13. 1. Everyone has the right to freedom of movement and residence within the borders of each state. 2. Everyone has the right to leave any country, including his own, and to return to his country. Article 14. 1. Everyone has the right to seek and to enjoy in other countries asylum from persecution. 2. This right may not be invoked in the case of prosecutions genuinely arising from non-political crimes or from acts contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. Article 15. 1. Everyone has the right to a nationality. 2. No one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his nationality, nor denied the right to change his nationality. Article 16. Men and women of full age, without any limitation due to race, nationality, or religion, have the right to marry and to found a family. They are entitled to equal rights as to marriage, during marriage, and at its dissolution. 2. Marriage shall be entered into only with the free and full consent of the intending spouses. 3. The family is the natural and fundamental group unit of society and is entitled to protection by society and the state. Article 17. 1. Everyone has the right to own property alone as well as in association with others. 2. No one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his property. Article 18. Everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes freedom to change his religion or belief and freedom, either alone or in community with others and in public or private, to manifest his religion or belief in teaching, practice, worship, and observance. Article 19. Everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. Article 20. 1. Everyone has the right to freedom of peaceful assembly and association. 2. No one may be compelled to belong to an association. Article 21. 1. Everyone has the right to take part in the government of his country, directly or through freely chosen representatives. 2. Everyone has the right of equal access to public service in his country. 3. The will of the people shall be the basis of the authority of government. This will shall be expressed in periodic and genuine elections, which shall be by universal and equal suffrage, and shall be held by secret vote or by equivalent free voting procedures. Article 22. Everyone, as a member of society, has the right to social security and is entitled to realization through national effort and international cooperation and in accordance with the organization and resources of each state of the economic, social, and cultural rights indispensable for his dignity and the free development of his personality. Article 23. 1. Everyone has the right to work, to free choice of employment, to just and favorable conditions of work, and to protection against unemployment. 2. Everyone, without any discrimination, has the right to equal pay for equal work. 3. Everyone who works has the right to just and favorable remuneration, ensuring for himself and his family an existence worthy of human dignity and supplemented, if necessary, by other means of social protection. 4. Everyone has the right to form and to join trade unions for the protection of his interests. Article 24. Everyone has the right to rest and leisure, including reasonable limitation of working hours and periodic holidays with pay. Article 25. 1. Everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and his family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care, and necessary social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widowhood, old age, or other lack of livelihood in circumstances beyond his control. 2. Motherhood and childhood are entitled to special care and assistance. All children, whether born in or out of wedlock, shall enjoy the same social protection. Article 26. 1. Everyone has a right to education. Education shall be free, at least in the elementary and fundamental stages. Elementary education shall be compulsory. Technical and professional education shall be made generally available, and higher education shall be equally accessible to all on the basis of merit. 2. Education shall be directed to the full development of the human personality and to the strengthening of respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms. It shall promote understanding, tolerance, and friendship among all nations, racial or religious groups, and shall further the activities of the United Nations for the maintenance of peace. 3. Parents have a prior right to choose the kind of education that shall be given to their children. Article 27. Everyone has the right freely to participate in the cultural life of the community, to enjoy the arts, and to share in scientific advancement and its benefits. 2. Everyone has the right to the protection of the moral and material interests resulting from any scientific, literary, or artistic production of which he is the author. Article 28. Everyone is entitled to a social and international order in which the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration can be fully realized. Article 29. 1. Everyone has duties to the community in which alone the free and full development of his personality is possible. 2. In the exercise of his rights and freedoms, everyone shall be subject only to such limitations as are determined by law solely for the purpose of securing due recognition and respect for the rights and freedoms of others and of meeting the just requirements of morality, public order, and the general welfare in a democratic society. 3. These rights and freedoms may in no case be exercised contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. And Article 30. Nothing in this declaration may be interpreted as implying for any state, group, or person any right to engage in any activity or to perform any act aimed at the destruction of any of the rights and freedoms set forth herein. And that was the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Our own Bill of Rights have their anniversary 5 days from today, on December 15th, the date 229 years ago in 1791, they were affixed to the new U.S. Constitution by popular demand as basic guarantee of individual rights of the common folk citizenry. Former U.S. Senator Eugene McCarthy of Wisconsin wrote in his 1962 Dictionary of American Politics, "Some of these 10 amendments are now relatively unimportant," which were, in his opinion, the second and third. "But others," he wrote, "especially the first, the fourth, the fifth, the seventh, and eighth, continue to be of great importance and significance." The Delaware chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union has thoughtfully trimmed away the stodgy 18th century legalese and presents the Bill of Rights in plain, simple language. Amendment 1. Congress can't make any law that favors one religion over another religion, or no religion at all, or opposes any religion, stops you from practicing your religion as you see fit, keeps you from saying whatever you want, even if you are criticizing the President of the United States, prevents newspapers, magazines, books, movies, radio, television, or the internet from presenting any new ideas and opinions that they choose, stops you from meeting peacefully for a demonstration or protest to ask the government to change something. Amendment 2. Congress can't stop people from having and carrying weapons. Amendment 3. You don't have to let soldiers live in your house except if there is a war, and even then Congress needs to pass a law and set the rules. Amendment 4. Nobody can search your body or your house or your papers and things unless they can prove to a judge that they have a good reason for the search. Amendment 5. Except during times of war or if you are in the military, you cannot be tried for any serious crime without a grand jury meeting first to decide whether there's enough evidence against you for a trial. If at the end of a trial the jury decides you are innocent, the government can't try you again for the same crime with another jury. You cannot be forced to admit you are guilty of a crime, and if you choose not to, you don't have to say anything at your trial at all. You can't be killed or put in jail or fined unless you are convicted of a crime by a jury and all of the proper legal steps during your arrest and trial were followed. And the government can't take your house or your farm or anything that is yours unless the government pays for it at a fair price. Amendment 6. If you are arrested and charged with a crime, you have a right to have your trial soon and in public so everyone knows what is happening. The case has to be decided by a jury of ordinary people from where you are, if you wish. You have the right to know what you are accused of doing wrong and to see and hear and cross-examine the people who are witnesses against you. You have the right to a lawyer to help you. If you cannot afford to pay the lawyer, the government will. Amendment 7. You also have the right to a jury when it is a civil case, a law case between two people rather than between you and the government. Amendment 8. The government can't make you pay more than is reasonable in bail or in fines, and the government can't inflict cruel or unusual punishment, like torture, even if you are convicted of a crime. Amendment 9. Just because these rights are listed in the Constitution doesn't mean that you don't have other rights, too. Amendment 10. Anything that the Constitution doesn't say that Congress can do is left up to the states and to the people. And that was the American Bill of Rights, which were simplified by the ACLU Delaware chapter. Eleanor Roosevelt's husband, Franklin, who was elected president of the USA an unprecedented 4 times, which the thwarted Donald Trump must desperately envy, compiled his own Bill of Rights. Every American has the right to 1, a job, 2, an adequate wage and decent living, 3, a decent home, 4, medical care, 5, economic protection during sickness, accident, old age, or unemployment, 6, a good education. FDR also summarized the values of democracy when he made what has been known as the 4 Freedoms speech, which are 1, freedom of speech, 2, freedom of worship, 3, freedom from want, 4, freedom from fear. Franklin Delano Roosevelt gave the annual State of the Union message in early 1941, the same year the USA was catapulted into World War II by the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. His speech is called the 4 Freedoms speech. Although he had expected that the United States soon would be at war against Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan, FDR's proclamation of the 4 Freedoms had absolutely nothing to do with Fortress America or fervent nationalism. They were universal, the world as a neighborhood after the fascists and imperialists were defeated. The 4 Freedoms, as he succinctly articulated, were and remain to be 79 years later. First is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world. Second is free of every person to worship God in his or her own way everywhere in the world. Third, freedom from want, which means economic understanding, which will secure to every nation a healthy peacetime life for its inhabitants everywhere in the world. Fourth is freedom from fear, which translated into world terms means a worldwide reduction of armaments to such a point and in such a thorough fashion that no nation will be in a position to commit an act of physical aggression against any neighbor anywhere in the world. That is no vision of a distant millennium, President Roosevelt said. It is a definite basis for a kind of world attainable in our own time and generation. That kind of world is the very antithesis to the so-called new order of tyranny dictators seek to create with the crash of a bomb, Roosevelt said. He did not live long enough to see his vision fail, although his great work toward creating the United Nations came to fruition and continues to exist into this new millennium. He died just before World War II ended at the beginning of his fourth term as president. 3 years later, Eleanor Roosevelt, who thought her public work ended with FDR's death, chaired the United Nations committee that produced the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights on December 10, 1948. Eleanor Roosevelt wrote in commemoration of human rights that a new world was born after the use of the atomic bomb in World War II. A world in which we have to learn to live in friendship with our neighbors of every race, creed, and color, or do away with civilization, she said. Shortly before his death on April 12, 1945, FDR wrote a speech that was never delivered. In that speech, he planned to say, "Today we are faced with the preeminent fact that if civilization is to survive, we must cultivate the science of human relationships, the ability of all peoples of all kinds to live together and work together in the same world at peace." The peace that ensued after the end of World War II that year was a half-century period known as either the Cold War or the nuclear arms race between the two major allies of World War II, the USSR and USA. This is Michael McCusker. Dylan Hauser Schalk engineered today's program. Perhaps a few Americans might remember the brief but scintillating Occupy Wall Street phenomenon that blazed through the USA and several other nations in 2011, which involved at least 600 U.S. communities, including Astoria, Oregon. "We are the 99%, was the rallying cry of Occupy. The Magna Carta of Occupy was a sort of vision statement. One, a truly free, democratic, and just society. Two, where we the people come together and solve our problems by consensus. Three, where people are encouraged to take personal and collective responsibility and participate in decision-making. Four, where we learn to live in harmony and embrace principles of toleration and respect for diversity and the differing views of others. Five, where we secure the civil and human rights of all from violation by tyrannical forces and unjust governments. Six, where political and economic institutions work to benefit all, not just the privileged few. Seven, where we provide full and free education to everyone, not merely to get jobs, but to grow and flourish as human beings. Eight, where we value human needs over monetary gain to ensure decent standards of living without which effective democracy is impossible. And nine, where we work together to protect the global environment to ensure that future generations will have safe and clean air, water, and food supplies, and will be able to..."